This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it, and I find myself staying up late to catch all the action. I can't be dragging the next morning. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or when my favorite team is playing late. With over 15 flavors to choose from, like watermelon, tropical burst, blue raspberry, peach mango, and more, there's a flavor for everyone. On their website, you have the option to build your own 12-pack or 24-pack and have it delivered right to your door. And if you're out and about, you can always pick up a 5-hour energy shot at your local grocery or convenience store. They're everywhere. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before the next tip-off.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW, because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
From KMOX Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wynn swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauley and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome into the downtown studios of KMOX for a Graybar Sports Open Line St. Patrick's Day edition. I'm Jen Cease. Obviously, I'm not Matt Pauley. I am filling in for him a few times this week, along with, I think, Scott Warman, who's going to take a couple of days for Sports Open Line as well this week. So no Matt Pauley this week, but we've got you covered on all things sports here on America's Sports Voice, KMOX. Kyle Sixta and Daniel Hinkamp are here with me in studio on the controls. They're going to have a lot of work to do, helping me out to cover so many things that happen in sports. I feel like that actually is a thing we could say almost every weekend, almost every show with what's going on in the area. So great to have you with us for a full 2-hour show with a lot to get to. First of all, Cardinal baseball. In just 10 days, believe it or not, it's Major League Baseball opening day as the Cardinals will take on the Minnesota Twins home at Busch Stadium. Today's preseason 6-2 win over the Washington Nationals sealed the deal for Sonny Gray to get the start. We'll talk about that first up this hour after the very first break with Joe Roderick of Sports Hub's St. Louis STL. We'll talk with him about that, about thoughts on preseason, and maybe even also the Cardinal pitcher rotation. Got some new news on that, and he'll cover that with me first up. Then we'll switch over to Blues hockey. Blues had back-to-back wins this weekend, Saturday beating the Minnesota Wild 5-1, Sunday 7-2 over the Anaheim Ducks. Joining me around 6:30 p.m. will be John Kelly, TV voice of the St. Louis Blues, to talk about how literally just 3 weeks ago or so he was talking about the fact that, you know, it really wasn't looking good and the Blues may, I think I saw in an article, those pesky Blues may have started to turn it around just in time to potentially make a run. So we'll talk about what we think John Kelly thinks about all that at about 6:30. And then toward the latter part of this hour, 6:45, we'll talk city soccer. back-to-back wins for them. Also, they had their Saturday night first win at home. They are one of seven undefeated teams in the MLS and the only club in the MLS yet to concede a goal this 2025 season. What we'll do there is we'll listen back to Lute Spanenstiel talk with Tom Ackerman on yesterday's Sports on a Sunday Morning. It was a great conversation and one definitely to play back for you to talk about not only that game, but his thoughts on the next coming game and the rest of the season. Then in the second hour, we'll flip over to men's college basketball. The SLU Billikens, seemingly their season over with their loss to Loyola in the A-10 quarterfinals. Tough loss to be sure, but the Bills have accepted an invitation to the NIT tournament with their first game tomorrow night. And on the other side of the river, the SIUE Cougars, the men's Ohio Valley Conference champs, will play their first ever game of the NCAA tournament on Thursday. We'll talk to Joe Pott about that, the Cougars, and then on the SLU side, we'll talk about with Stu Durango, sports writer covering SLU Billikens basketball. And last but not least up in the second hour, we're going to switch over to NWSL women's soccer. It's a league that just started their weekend. They kicked off 14 teams played in seven games to kick off the 2025 season. A lot of things happening in that league as well. That's a lot to cover this hour. We'll talk about that part with Justin Horniker, writer for the St. Louis Magazine. A lot to cover for this hour. Let's take a break and then we'll get right to it. Stay right here for more on a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Jen C's here filling in for Matt Pauley for this Graybar Sports Open Line. You know, before today's spring training game, Cards manager Ali Marmol talked about the possibility of a six-man pitching rotation.
Yeah, we're discussing it a decent amount this morning. We'll finish the conversation later on this afternoon. By end of day, we want real clarity as to what that looks like. So solid conversation with our staff this morning about it.
And that was before today's preseason 6-2 win over the Washington Nationals that sealed the deal for Sonny Gray to get the start. Cards president of baseball operations, John Mozeliak, saying, and I quote, "He's our dude." And in 10 days, the Major League Baseball opening day will be with the Cardinals as they take on Minnesota Twins at Busch Stadium, as we said, with Sonny Gray getting the start. And here with me to talk about it now, Joe Roderick of Sports Hub STL. Joe, thanks for joining me today to talk all things Cardinal baseball. A lot of stuff still seeming to be in flux.
Absolutely, Jen. Anytime. Yeah, there's still a couple question marks as far as some of the spots left for that opening day lineup and opening day roster.
Well, let me start with just a general question for you. For the St. Louis Cardinals, just six more preseason games left. And preseason, I feel like this is almost for any sport, you know, tells you less than you want it to tell you and sometimes doesn't mean what we think it means. But what can preseason for the Cardinals tell us now as they head into, you know, in just 10 days, the regular season?
I think there's still a few starting positions that are up for grabs. I think these final few days, these final six games, there is a huge spotlight on someone like Victor Scott or maybe a Nolan Gorman. And even though, you know, you're talking center field and second base, there, those two spots right there, I think it comes down to those two as far as, you know, who's going to get that starting edge, because there's so many different guys that can move all over the place that you're, you know, that's kind of the focus right now. And Victor Scott has had a really, really good spring. I think he came in probably your third string center fielder. I think it was Michael Ciani's job to lose. And if Michael Ciani didn't perform, maybe you give it to Lars Nootbaar, and then Victor Scott was a distant third. But with the way that he's hit so far, and you know his speed, you know his defense is there, I think he has worked his way into that starting position that's kind of opened up a lot of other options for Ollie Marmol as far as what he wants to do in left field, at DH, at second base, because you know that now you have a Victor Scott who looks like a far different hitter than what we saw in St. Louis at the start of last year. Yeah, he wants that role. He looks like he's ready for major league action, where maybe he was kind of thrown into it really last minute. I mean, it really was last minute that he was kind of thrown into that starting role last year, and now maybe he's had a year to learn.
Let me ask you, too, about, I feel like the elephant in the room is the, when it came out that Sonny Gray would be picked already for the start. I know that there are some fans that are a little worried about that. Preseason doesn't always indicate how your regular season will go. How does that hit with you, and how do you think that that's going to turn out on opening day?
I think from the beginning, the only way that Sonny Gray wasn't going to be the opening day starter is if he was hurt again. I was down there the first week of full team practices, and I remember being in those media scrums with Ollie in the morning, and several members of the media were asking him before a game was even played, oh, is Sonny the opening day starter? And Ollie was just kind of like, guys, can we at least play some games first before you start asking me those questions? And I think it was always just assumed. You know, there's certain teams that you just know who the starting pitcher was. And given Sonny Gray's track record, given that he is he's the multi-time All-Star, they gave him the contract they did last year, he was brought to St. Louis to be the opening day starter. He was brought here to be the ace of the staff, to be that number one. So it was his as long as he's healthy. And it's not, the numbers aren't great. they really aren't. I think, I wrote them out in our newsletter we sent out today, and actually typing them out, I knew it was bad, but then you put it on, when you type the numbers, you're like, ooh, yeah, that's not what you want out of your ace. And it's the walks, it's the home runs that really make you cringe. And, he said it yesterday. I know he talked to the media after his start yesterday. He said, look, I've been doing this for a long time. I've had great preseasons and then was terrible. I've had terrible preseasons and I made an All-Star team. So he knows what he's doing. I really hope that he is able to flip that switch a week from Thursday.
Yeah, I was actually just going there to his quote to say, he hasn't necessarily had a correlation between a rocky spring training and a great season, or vice versa necessarily. But to your point, he's a seasoned veteran. He knows what to do on opening day. It's not like it's his first show. And hopefully the significance of the day and his being a veteran and knowing what that feels like, he's able to lead the team on the day.
Yeah, and I just to even go, to a different position, a different, I guess, mindset, I saw a quote from Tony Gwynn a few weeks ago. Back when he played, he talked about how he didn't want to come out hot in spring training. He didn't want to come out hitting 800 the first 3-4 weeks of spring training. It was about the last week of spring training. That's when he wanted to turn it on. That's when he wanted to be game ready, because baseball is such a game of streaks and such a game of ups and downs that and I know you want your pitchers to not have those streaks. I know that's more of a hitting thing, but still, Sonny Gray has at least one more start. He's working on stuff in the bullpens. He's working on stuff behind the scenes. But you do trust that this is a guy that's in what is 15th season, that he knows what he's doing and he knows where he needs to be.
Also on Sunday, John Mozeliak talked with Tom Ackerman. I listened back to that conversation, and he spent quite a bit of time talking about mentorship in the bullpen. That it's not just the coaches that need to coach the younger pitchers, but it's the veteran pitchers. And he specifically called out Phil Maton as potentially being one of those members in the bullpen. Do you see him taking on that kind of role and being able to have, you know, good influence over the younger guys and not only how they come into a game, but also how they keep themselves prepared throughout the season?
Oh, absolutely. And it could work both ways, too. The bullpen is one, it's an aspect of baseball that's always fascinated me because you can have a guy come into the bullpen and for half a season be absolutely lights out, untouchable, and then somehow he shows up the next year and he gets lit up, has an ADRA, he gets released, he ends up on another team. It's fickle, really, when you look at it. But then you have a guy who'll go to a new team and somebody in that bullpen will just look at it and say, oh, this is how you grip your curveball. Have you ever thought of doing it this way? And next thing you know, the guy can't be touched. And that's something that those pitchers have no problem passing around and sharing those little tips with each other. And that is something that, yeah, Phil Maton has been in a lot of bullpens and he came from a winning team last year that maybe he teaches one of the young guys something. And who knows, maybe, you know, one of the young guys teaches him something and he's even better than what he was last year. I kind of said, you know, I said this last week, with Phil Maton, it's kind of a, you know, there's four scenarios. There's too good, there's too bad. If he's really good and the Cardinals are really good, then Phil Maton's leading you to the playoffs. If he's really good and the Cardinals are bad, then you trade him and you get something really good for him at the trade deadline. But if Maton's bad, either way, you just release him. It was $2 million. And you know, that in today's baseball, that's not a whole lot of money to give it a try.
All right. Well, thanks, Joe, for joining me today on a Sports Open Line. Have a great the next six preseason games and go Cards on opening day, which is just 10 days from now.
I am so ready for spring training to be over with and for these games to matter. Absolutely, Jen. Thank you so much.
Thank you. That was Joe Roderick, Sports Hub STL, talking all things Cardinals. More to come. We'll switch over to hockey, Blues hockey, with back-to-back wins over the weekend. We'll talk about it with their TV voice, John Kelly, next on KMOX. Jen C's back with you on a Graybar Sports Open Line, filling in for Matt Pauley tonight. Joining me now, John Kelly, TV voice of St. Louis Blues hockey. John, thanks for joining me tonight.
My pleasure, Jen. How are you doing?
Good. How are you? I don't know if you remember this, but you and I met a very, very long time ago in your very beginning Colorado Avalanche days when you're the voice of Colorado Avalanche. I was a grad student at CU Denver, and we got a chance to meet. I will admit I did a little bit of babysitting for you back in the day. I hope I did a good job. It was always nice to come over and watch the game and watch your kids.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't it? Yeah, time flies.
Who are now adults.
I remember you. And you did a great job. Our kids have turned out great, and
great.
In part because of you, Jen.
Yay! I always appreciated that, and when I see your posts now on Facebook, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're grown adults now. I feel even older. But now, of course, it was great when, you know, I was back in St. Louis, and to see you come back to St. Louis as the TV voice of St. Louis Blues. I listened back to an interview you did with KMOV Sports. It was about 3 weeks ago, and you were talking about the first half of the season with the coaching change to Jim Montgomery, the spark, of course, that ignites when you typically have a coaching change, and then the Blues had a drop-off. And you really specifically talked about consistency, not only consistency game to game, but like period to period. Now 68 games in, only 14 to go with back-to-back wins over the weekend. I've just read a headline somewhere that said, don't count out those pesky Blues just yet.
Well, exactly. I mean, they're tied in points for the final wild card spot and only 6 points behind Minnesota. And they occupy the first wild card spot and they're really struggling right now. And the Blues have only 2 regulation losses in their last 13. So they found their consistency, Jen. And it really was almost like a light switch went on out of the Four Nations tournament break. And I don't know why. All I know is that they're playing well. Their top players are playing well, including Robert Thomas and Buchnevich and neighbors on the top line. But more than that, they have consistency on all four lines. And on defense, obviously, they played really well. And Binnington has lost only one of his starts in the last 7. Obviously, they missed Parayko. But you know, they're staying with the same lineup every night, and why change if it's not broken? So it's really fun to see. And again, I don't know why it took so long to click in. Probably a lot of factors, a lot of new players, and obviously the coaching situation. But I know Blues fans are happy that it has turned around, and this is a lot of fun right now to watch this team.
Yeah, for sure. And it was also fun. I saw a snippet that the Blues posted. Braden Chen honored before the game Sunday for being the 16th player in Blues history to play in 1,000 games. That makes me tired even thinking about that. And he had goals on Saturday and Sunday. So one of those individual players that, you know, has always been a performer, but is really stepping it up now as well.
Yeah, in last night's game, and again, as you said, they honored him in a great pregame ceremony, just typify what Braden Chen is all about. He scores the goal 41 seconds in, and then later in the period, tough defenseman Jacob Trouba hits Kyrou from behind. You know, a bit of a head shot. It wasn't called a penalty, but certainly a tough hit. And what does Chen do? He fights Trouba, who's a bigger guy. I mean, Trouba goes 6'3", 212, so... Braden gave up some size, and that's what Braden's done his entire career. He sticks up for his team. He leads by example, and he just played a typical Braden Chen game on a night that he was honored. So it's great to see him scoring and leading his line with Holloway, and Kyrou has been probably the Blues' most consistent line, I would say, all season long, especially in the last couple of months. So that's great to see that even at his age, I think he's 33 now, the old guy still has a lot of fire in his belly, and he's leading in the right way.
Right, and a hat trick for him on Sunday. So it's not like that hit bothered him too much, or it did exactly what it needed and lit a fire.
Yeah, Kyrou had the hat trick Saturday, and then he had three assists on Sunday.
Oh, right. Right. I had the other way around. Right. Three assists on Sunday. He was busy all weekend.
He had, you know what, 6 points are 6 points in two games. It doesn't matter how you get them. But, yeah, he was fantastic, especially in Minnesota. His second goal was a beautiful wraparound goal. But, again, that line, they've been together now. I'd have to go back and look at my records. But, you know, this Holloway-Chen-Kyrou line, for the most part, has played together now for at least 2 months, if not more. And they have great chemistry. And, you know, Chen is such a good, versatile two-way center iceman, Jen. And both Holloway and Kyrou, as you know, have great speed. So, you know, if Chen can distribute the puck and, you know, get it to those guys, they can do some damage. And that's what they've done, certainly, especially since they've been put together.
Yeah, you said Dylan Holloway in that interview a few weeks ago, you had talked about him. You said the sky's the limit for him. What makes it about Holloway somebody that you look at and just see nothing but stars for in the future?
Well, he has so many attributes. Number one, he's got great speed. And number two, he's got a great shot. So you combine those two things, you're going to score a lot of goals. He has 22 goals now. And I think that for sure he's got a shot at 30 goals this year, an outside shot. And I can see him being a consistent 30-goal scorer, maybe 40 down the road. It's only his second year in the NHL. I mean, he's still a young player. He's also a guy that is not afraid to get to the inside. He has good hockey sense and just has so many great characteristics. I could go on and on about Dylan Holloway, but the Blues certainly this summer with those offer sheets getting Holloway and Broberg, and the price was not very steep, as Blues fans know. This has been a home run for the Blues in so many senses, and it really accelerated their, not rebuild, but their retool. When you add a top six forward and a top four defenseman and don't lose a player off your roster, that's just win-win, and that's what has happened with Holloway and Broberg.
So, of course, looking to the next game, the league's number 16 Blues take on number 30 Nashville Predators tomorrow, Tuesday, March 18th. Puck drops at 7. What are your outlooks on that game? When I look at rankings and I look at any sport, really, and you take a top or higher ranking and you play a lower ranking, you also have to remind your higher ranking, don't take that for granted.
Well, yeah, obviously the Blues, like any team, you just can't win every game against teams that are below you in the standings just because they're below you. The Blues saw that in Pittsburgh on Thursday. They outplayed the Penguins, but lost the game. Binnington had an off night, and, you know, they couldn't get the 2 points. It's only the second meeting this year against the Predators. The Blues won the first game 7-4 back on December 27th, and now they're going to meet three times here in the next week or so. So we're going to see a lot of the Nashville Predators. It's a team that has played better lately, but they're not going to make the playoffs. And it's been a strange year. They added the likes of Jonathan Marchessault and Steven Stamkos in the offseason. And quite honestly, Jen, I thought going into this season, based on what they did last year, they were a playoff team. I thought they were a slam dunk to make the playoffs. But they added a lot of players, as I said, and for whatever reason, it hasn't worked. And I don't know why. You know, is it chemistry or, you know, those players are a bit older. They're not the fleetest of foot. But for whatever reason, it just hasn't clicked in Nashville. Obviously, Blues fans aren't too concerned about that. But hopefully the Blues can take advantage of that because, again, they have three games left against the Predators starting tomorrow night.
And momentum means everything. John, thanks for your time, and we look forward to hearing you on the call tomorrow.
All right, Jen, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Great job.
You got it. That was John Kelly. He's the voice of the Blues on your TV broadcast. He'll be from Bridgestone Arena in Nashville tomorrow night. Puck drops at 7 p.m. Well, we got another segment to go. Time to talk some soccer. City Soccer undefeated with their first home win of the season over the weekend. We'll get to that next on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Edward Wright.
Get in there. Yes!
Get it, baby! Oh, baby! Edward Lubin!
That was Joey Zanaboni and Dale Shilley on the winning goal call Saturday as City finally took points from the Seattle Sounders with their first win at home this season. I'm Jen Cease filling in for Matt Pauley. And just yesterday on Sports on a Sunday Morning, KMOX Sports Director Tom Ackerman had his weekly chat with Lutz Pfannenstiel, Sporting Director for St. Louis City SC. Let's listen back to their chat about the win, the goalkeeper situation, and preparation for Philadelphia Union.
St. Louis City SC beats Seattle 1-0. They have four consecutive clean sheets to start the season. We are joined by Sporting Director for St. Louis City SC, Lutz Pfannenstiel. It's always a pleasure, my friend, as I come to you from Jupiter, Florida, the spring training home of the Cardinals. How are things in St. Louis?
Yeah, it's good, you know. Getting a home win finally, like second game at home, and I think especially against a team like Seattle, which was our bogey team so far, having played them four times, haven't picked up a point, getting that win was definitely a very important step forward.
Well, you continue to lock it down defensively. Before we talk about Lunt and Berkey, how about just overall the way that you are playing defensively and limiting opportunities and chances for other teams?
Really, really solid. I think the way we defend as a group, and defending is not just meaning the back five or the back three. I think it starts with the strikers who are closing down the spaces. I think that's overall really impressive so far the whole season. I think one or two shots on target, which is not much. Did Seattle really had a lot of clear-cut chances? No, they didn't. So it's really a big improvement when it comes to that, looking into the last years, actually, how we structure, how we organize our defensive lineup. And, you know, that's usually what wins you games. You don't need to always have that offensive firework and create six, seven chances. If you're smart, you defend well, and you use the chances in the right moment. Or a set piece that really gives you the points. And as a group, Tom, we really defend well so far.
Yes, you have. And Lunt in goal for you, and Leuven with the goal, and City wins it 1-0. It was close there at the end, though. They call for a penalty shot, and then, oh, hold on a second. There's a handball. They went back and looked at it, and indeed, a handball, and it turns out to be a finish for City 1-0. That was something. And then, you know, just overall, the fact that you had to make the change, my obvious question is, how is Berkey? What is the latest there with his hand?
Yeah, you know, it was in the morning, of course, a bit of a shock. So we had normal training session on Friday, and he, He made a save. He got the ball a bit awkward on his hand. Didn't really look like anything crazy. So we waited for Saturday morning and see how it went. And then he did the x-ray, and it's obviously it's a fracture, but it's nothing crazy. So we're not talking about an extremely long time here, but we will see a specialist tomorrow. And then we have to make that a last final decision. But then again, you know, it happens in football. Injuries are part of the game. And of course, if the captain, the best goalkeeper in the league, is out on a short notice, that could actually rattle a team. But then again, we have a good group. And as you saw, we believe in Ben Lund's quality. You know, he's an experienced goalkeeper. He's around for a long time. He works really well together with Roman. And really all the compliments from myself, being a former goalkeeper. Very solid, very confident performance. And keeping a clean sheet is always great in the first game of the season. So we are obviously looking forward for Roman to return. But in the meantime, there is a lot of belief and a lot of trust in Ben Lund, who had a good game and great preseason, by the way, as well. So absolutely no problems here.
And just a little bit more on Lunt. He and Roman are very close, aren't they? They're really good friends. Roman shot him a text in the morning just to give him a heads up, but it was the day of.
Yeah, Tom, we're all very close friends, as you know. But it's very important, I think, when it comes to this goalkeeper hierarchy. If we have two guys who are at the same level and they fight for the spot, you do not have this relationship. So I think here it's pretty much clear that Roman is our star player. Roman is our DP. Roman is an absolutely top goalkeeper. I would call it an international top goalkeeper. So for Ben, as a second choice, it's very tough because you're training every day, you work really hard, but then you need to be ready in this right moment. And I think a relationship them to build, where I think the basic situation, the starting situation is very clear. Roman is number one and Ben is number two. You need to have a special character to live actually in that role as the second choice, as the backup, and that only works out well if there is a good relationship between the number one and the number two. Having said that, you know, being a goalkeeper myself before, I was the worst number two in the world because if you cannot accept that you're being on the bench and the other guy is better, then you create a problem for yourself and for the team. And there we are really fortunate that with Birki Lund and also Olivares have a very, very clear structure where our goalkeeper coach Alex Langer does a fantastic job. And I think that pays off in the end of the day.
That's a really good point. What about in midfield? You had Akil Watts with Chris Durkin and Edward Leuven. If you could get into that a little bit and your change in formation.
Yeah, it was, I think, a bit of a surprise for the fans, you know, see Akil on a kind of, I would call it, Y10 position, more an offensive position. He normally plays as a wing-back or a full-back or as a six. But I think he worked out well because he's very athletic. He worked hard. He got a few good runs behind their back three. And I think this whole combination with Durkin, which is a warrior, hard-tackling, hard-working guy, and obviously Edu, which scored a screamer. We haven't spoken about that. I mean, it was a wonderful free kick, like really beautiful. But it was a different formation. I think it caught Seattle a bit by surprise because they didn't really know where Watts will show up during that game. And that's something really, really smartly done by the coaching staff to get a bit of a surprise in there as well.
Yeah, it was really something. Leuven has a lot of confidence. There's no question about that. And you're starting to see it now. Here we go again with this team. When they start to play well together, it is something to behold. And who could have anticipated giving up no goals? Let me ask an alternate question. Is there something that you would like to see this team do better right now? Is there something that is lacking early in the season?
You know, we don't really want to jinx that now because, as you see, obviously people coming into the stadium and they want to see, especially in America, high-scoring games. And people, of course, they love a 5-1 or a 5-2 more than a 1-0. But when it comes to the whole season, I think winning games like yesterday is very important. So right now, obviously, I don't want to change anything, but there is always room for improvement. Yeah, we also have to be honest. It was not the perfect game, you know, and it never is a perfect game. So can we be better with the ball? Can we create more chances? Of course we can. Can we have a different setup sometimes in a while to get a bit more behind the back four? Yes, we can do that as well, but if it's not necessary, it's nothing which has to be changed right now. I think you develop over the course of a season or you develop over the course of the first half of the season. Right now, I think we should be happy what we get out of the team. We should be happy with the results. You know, I said in the start of the season, the first five games are tremendously difficult, playing against some top teams in the league. Also next week, goes a special game in Philly. So where we are standing right now, I think it's pretty impressive having not conceded a goal in four games. Not many teams in MLS history have done that. So I think that is something Tomby can and we should build up on.
Absolutely. You know, there's a coach that I've talked to many times through the years who says, and it just happened this past season for him, that he won games. They found a way to win the football game and they walked off the field a winner. And he said, if people can have whatever narrative they want and talk about our team and shape it however they want us to do certain things, and I don't care. I will go out there and we're going to do it the way we do it and we're going to find ways to win. And that guy is Eli Drinkwitz, who was on the pitch delivering the match ball. I saw that you had a chance to exchange some words with him. He is something else. And the crowd really got into it, didn't they, that the Mizzou players and coach were there?
Yeah, it was really, really nice. You know, I never met him before, so we had a good talk yesterday. It was funny because he actually followed up what I did before in my life. So we had a good talk, and actually we agreed that I will come up there to Columbia once they start training and playing again to kind of shadow him a little bit to see actually how Mizzou is set up, how they prepare for a game, how they do play in a game. So it's something which I haven't seen before. And, you know, I'm always, even though I'm already have gray hair, I still feel young by heart. There's lots of things you can learn and pick up from other sports. So that's something I'm really looking forward to. Very interesting personality, very, very open-minded. Yeah, it was great to meet him, to be honest. I'm very surprised you didn't ask me about the game against Philly next week.
Yeah, I usually do. Give me a little preview of that.
Well, I mean, you know, top team, they're doing well. And Bradley Connell, their manager, it's a special game for us as well. It's a special game for him as well. We're really looking forward to play against Philly, to play against Bradley. That's one of the teams I have the closest ties to in general, where the sporting director is something like my brother. We worked before together in Germany for many, many years. So I'm really looking forward to go to Philly next week.
That was Lutz Fanischield talking with Tom Ackerman. He was not going to let Tom get away without talking about the Philadelphia Union. I don't know who's more excited to go, the team or Lutz Fanischield, to not only see his friend Bradley Carnell, but as always a competitor to see if he can beat Bradley Carnell with the Philadelphia Union. Well, it's been a busy hour. Thanks to our earlier guest, Joe Roderick, with Sports Hub STL talking Cardinals baseball, and TV voice of the Blues, John Kelly, for his insight on the Blues' chance for a wild card this season. But we're only halfway through. More to come as we switch our focus in the second hour of Sports Open Line to college basketball and also the NWSL. More to come. Stay with us on hour number two of the Gray Bar Sports Open Line after the news right here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
Nope, it's Jen Cease filling in for Matt Pauley on this Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Welcome into the downtown KMOX studios. Kyle Sixta and Daniel Hinkamp are here with me in studio. You know, you guys, in the first hour, we talked, like, I wanted to hit like all the pro sports in town, right? At least the ones that are currently in action or close to action. St. Louis Cardinals baseball, of course. We talked Blues hockey and city soccer. Kyle, I know you're my guy for Cardinals baseball. Obviously, I had to ask the question about Sonny Gray. That's just kind of the elephant in the room. But what didn't we get to with our guests that maybe stuck out with you on the preseason or what's heading to for the season?
What I think is really interesting that we learned from Cards manager Ollie Marmol today was the possibility of them using the six-man rotation. We played that audio clip from him earlier before their spring training game today against the Nats, and I just find that to be really interesting because, I mean, you have the older pitchers in the rotation like Miles Michaelis and you have Steven Matz, but then you have the young guys, and they've said that they're committed to giving these young guys innings. You have Michael McGreevy. They've talked about possibly putting Matthew Liberatore back in the rotation. You have guys knocking on the doorstep like Tekoa Roby. So it's really interesting where they're going to get those innings from. Is a six-man rotation the answer? Ollie Marmol's not ruling it out. He says it's a possibility. So early in the season, you don't really see six-man rotations like that because that's something that happens as the season progresses and guys get tired. But it's really interesting. Is that the way that they're going to get guys starts this year?
So I said the balance of rest versus getting repetition.
Exactly.
All right. And I also talked a little bit about Blues hockey. And Daniel, I heard that Blues is your game. We, of course, talked with, you know, when you talk to a TV or radio voice legend, John Kelly is certainly among the greats. Great to talk with him. What stuck out with you about the conversation? You know, the Blues certainly at one point in time, just 3 weeks ago, almost being counted out in what I feel like is typical Blues fashion sometimes, really making that, oh no, we're not done yet.
So I think the Four Nations had a lot to do with that after the break. The Parayko coming back, unfortunately, with an injury. We thought that was going to hinder the team's performance on defense, but Tyler Tucker stepped up and played a huge role back there. And also, Jordan Binnington has been a different man since the Four Nations, and he's really been shown why he's the backbone of the Blues organization, because if he's off, then there's a lot more that the defense has to do. So I think Jordan Binnington and the Blues, if they can keep playing like they're playing right now, they'll have a pretty strong finish this season.
And it sounds like consistency that John talked about, and then momentum and making sure they go and get this next win, even, and not underestimating any team they come in contact with, might be the only way they can get there.
Yeah, certainly the Blues have struggled with playing teams that are lower than them. They seem to excel against the teams that are at the top of the conference and the top of the league. But they need to treat these teams like, such as the when they're playing the Predators, who are having a struggling season so far, they need to treat them like they're playing the Tampa Bay Lightning. They need to treat them like they're playing the Capitals, who are first in the league right now, and not take any of those wins for granted.
Awesome, you guys. I appreciate your input. Well, we switch. Of course, we talked City Soccer, but Lutz Van den Steele and Tom Ackerman really covered all that. So we're going to switch this hour over to men's college basketball and women's soccer. So first, the SLU Billikens, seemingly their season over with their loss to Loyola in the A-10 quarterfinals. That was a tough loss to be sure, but the Bills have accepted an invitation to the NIT tournament with their first game tomorrow night. We'll talk about it with Stu Durando, sports writer covering the Bills basketball. He'll give us all the detail on that matchup and what that's going to look like. On the other side of the river, the SIU Cougars, got to talk about them too. The Ohio Valley Conference champs, they're going to play their first game of the NCAA tournament on Thursday. We'll visit with Joe Pott, voice of the Cougars, not only about the team's excitement, but also about his own when he had the call. And then we'll round out the hour talking about NWSL soccer. They opened their season action this weekend with all 14 teams taking each other on, and always keeping that up to date is Justin Horniker of St. Louis Magazine. That's a lot to cover this hour. Let's take a break and we'll get right to it. Stay right here for more on a Gray Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. Jen C's back with you on a Gray Bar Sports Open Line, filling in for Matt Pauly tonight. Joining me now is Stu Durando, longtime sports writer for STL Today, now dedicated to covering SLU Billikens. You can find him on Substack under Stu on SLU. That's really catchy. Stu, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks. Yeah, that was kind of the hope.
Yeah, you can't forget that.
Sticking people's minds, exactly.
Well, I'll tell you, on KMOX's Friday Sports Open Line, listening back to them and then listening to yesterday's sports on a Sunday morning with Tom Ackerman, the conversation was largely just basically around the end of the SLU men's basketball season with their loss to Loyola in the A-10 quarterfinals. But as we know, the Billikens aren't done just yet. Last night, accepting an invitation to the NIT tournament with their first game tomorrow night against the number 3 seed Arkansas State. For the Bills, their 21st appearance in the NIT and the first since 2022. So I just found that interesting. We're going from Sunday basically saying, hey, let's talk about the season. Let's recap and review and reset. Maybe the NIT. And now it's, yes, the NIT. How is the team ready for that quick a turnaround for the game already tomorrow night?
Yeah, it just kind of is like a continuation of the schedule they had. I don't know how much anyone was really thinking about postseason when we were in Washington. It was kind of on the radar, but kind of not. And just the way the off seasons are now, I mean, postseason in college basketball with different tournaments, it's gotten kind of unpredictable. So I would think they're ready. They just played 2 games, and you know, if it were the regular season, they would have played probably on a Tuesday night anyways after a weekend game. So it just kind of continues the rhythm of the season, assuming they're all healthy and ready to play.
Well, I saw one of your updates on your Twitter X account that talked about that SLU had the option of playing in the college basketball crown, but the players didn't want to wait until the end of March to play and felt the NIT was a better option. And, you know, considering they have made a number of appearances there, it's just been a few years. Was that just the quickness of wanting to play for them or the tournament itself?
Yeah, I think so. It's just a weird deal with that crown event in Las Vegas, where it doesn't start till March 31st. So you'd be sitting out for 2 weeks. You'd be practicing a bunch, waiting for a game that's 2 weeks away. You know, some of these guys are old by college basketball terms. Yeah, and sitting around and then trying to play in 2 weeks might not have been maybe the greatest deal for Gibson Jimerson or Isaiah Swope. So I think that was part of it. They just didn't want to wait. I think Josh Schertz kind of agreed. We've got the portal season starting next Monday. The portal opens, and if guys are going to get in the portal, they're going to want to do it and not wait until early April when maybe opportunities are less. I don't know if guys are going to go in or not, but just kind of thinking it through, I think they just felt like playing right now would be better than playing in 2 weeks.
Yeah. On Sunday, Coach Josh Schertz talked a little bit about Loyola, in particular their physical play, particularly with Gibson Jimerson. Jimerson averaging 18.6 points over the last 10 games. Is that the way that maybe Arkansas might try to deal with somebody that's as threat that Gibson Jimerson is deal with him with physical play?
Yeah, he's seen that for a long time now where, I mean, he's moving around on the court so much and got, I mean, just he's constantly being, you know, clutched and grabbed and scratched, and he's gotten used to it. He never says a single word about it. So it's just kind of become part of his, what he has to deal with. And, you know, some teams have done it and, you know, tried to be real physical and it hasn't worked. Loyola, you know, was able to bottle him up and not let him get many shots. So, yeah, that's kind of the, I think, a ploy that they use with him. They use it with Avila also and try and rattle him a little bit. So I can't honestly tell you that I know that Arkansas State is a physical kind of team. I know they like to play fast, but I don't know how physical they are. So we'll have to wait and see till tomorrow night on that.
And you mentioned Isaiah Swope, of course. He's listening back to all the knee problems that he has dealt with. He's still averaging 17.1 points per game, 4.3 assists for the Billikens. Definitely going to be a clutch player going in to play a number three seed team.
Yeah, he's played his best probably of the season in the last 2-3 weeks. His shot's been better. You know, he had a little bit of a break during a bye week to rest his knee, and he hasn't practiced. You know, he is usually practiced like once a week during the season to just kind of let that knee that he had surgery on rest up and not give him problems. And he has responded well to having a week off there back a ways to, you know, finishing really strong. I mean, he kept them in the Loyola game. You know, he won a couple of games for him down the stretch with his shooting. So he's been really sharp.
I was looking on the Billikens website. They published some nice facts for me to look at. And it said the Billikens hold a 10-1 all-time record against the Red Wolves. Last meeting occurring in 2011-2012 season at Schaaf. It's been a while. Looking at that, of course, that was back then. This is now. The teams are different. What do you see as, if you can put in your crystal ball, what the match like? You mentioned speed, but what the matchup might look like tomorrow night?
Yeah, they do. They sure said they like to play fast. They finished in a big tie in the Sun Belt Conference for first place and then ended up losing in the championship game. I do know that they won at Memphis, which is a pretty impressive feat for beating a team that's going to the tournament. They lost what was a fairly close game at Alabama by 9 points. So one of the top teams in the country there, they have experience against. I can't think of what other games, but, you know, they've been very, very competitive. They're playing at home. So with those just based on those results and the fact that they like to play fast, it's going to be an interesting mix of styles.
All right, well, we are looking forward to having the game on Camo X, of course, tomorrow night. And you, I'm sure, will be busy, right, with your Twitter fingers and your updating fingers, updating everybody on the happenings. And, of course, writing on your Substack about whatever those results might be. You're going to have anything out that comes out before, like a preview of the game maybe tomorrow on your Substack?
Right now, I was kind of toying with a story on just the Atlantic 10's problems with getting teams in the NCAA tournament and how things have kind of gone sour for them in recent years. So I'm not specifically going to preview the game beforehand, but kind of look at the Atlantic 10 and what's going on with the conference.
All right. Well, looking forward to that. Stu, thanks for joining me tonight on Sports Open Line.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
That was Stu Durando, longtime sports writer for STL Today. Now he's dedicated to covering SLU Billikens. You can find him on Substack under Stu on SLU. I will remember that forever. It is very catchy. A next game, as we just talked about, the SLU Billikens take on Arkansas State Red Wolves tomorrow, Tuesday, March 18th. Pre-game right here on KMOX at 7:45 p.m. with tip-off at 8. More to come. We stay men's college basketball, but we visit the other side of the river. SIUE Cougars voice Joe Pott's going to talk to us about his exciting times and his exciting calls in their basketball pursuit. That's coming up next on KMOX.
Southeast Missouri State will bring it across with Rob Martin. Martin to his right, pulls up in the lane, missed it, Ring Malith rebounds. 30 seconds left, the shot clock and the game clock are almost identical. The SIUE fans rising to their feet. The greatest season in SIUE basketball history is gonna include a trip to the NCAA tournament. Rayshon Taylor dribbling it out, the shot clock and the game clock winding down. The Cougars are going to do it. Taylor is stripped, the ball is loose, and time is out. Time is out. SIUE is going dancing. The SIUE Cougars have knocked off the Red Hawks 69-48. In their 17th season in Division One, the Cougars are going to the big dance.
You heard it right there. The Ohio Valley Conference champion SIUE basketball, men's basketball team, has earned a number 16 seed and will be facing number 1 seed Houston Thursday afternoon in the first round of the NCAA tournament in Wichita, Kansas. And you heard it from Joe Pott. You can hear him often on KMOX sports shows, and he's the voice of the SIUE Cougars. Joe, thanks for joining me tonight, and truly tell me, who was more excited, you or the players?
Man, you're getting me. I'm getting all emotional again.
I'm excited. I wasn't there.
it was, my part of that emotion is just understanding what the university and the athletics department has invested in athletics for as long as they've been making, you know, from when they made that transition all the way through. I know how much has gone into that. And so there was definitely a lot of emotion behind that.
Yeah, and just so first of all, you know, just the part of being the Ohio Valley Conference champion in and of itself. Then the secondly, being a part of the NCAA tournament, which I believe is, if I have it right, is SIUE's first time.
Absolutely. It is. I mean, what kind of event the, you know, March Madness is in the NCAA tournament, and the listeners know that, they understand that, and to see your name called, the school that you represent, and the guys that, you know, work so hard to see that come up, and you know that you're in that bracket, it's pretty cool.
Can I honestly ask, are the guys even getting any studying done right now because they are also in school, or are we just focusing on basketball?
I will tell you, the good timing is right when that week after the tournament ended, the OVC tournament, it was spring break.
All right.
So they had a good excuse right there, and that was it was good because I know they were busy. They were being pulled in a lot of directions. The media attention has been amazing, outstanding, awesome. It's just, again, it's so gratifying to see the letters SIUE, to see it all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, just looking at two and seeing it among the bracket, right, as well, to see your name amongst what really any college team is looking to get to. There's lots of tournaments, and this is the one that everybody wants to be in. That said, of course, drawing the number one seed, Houston, you would know better than I would. What does that do for a number 16 seed who's got totally the energy, right, and the spark behind getting there, that enthusiasm, but of course facing up against a team that's got the number one seed for a reason?
They're ready to shock the world, Jen. I don't know what you're talking about. No, I think honestly, truly though, that's the attitude. I think this team has played together all year. They've faced adversity. They've, you know, had injuries like any team does. But to have this run down the stretch to win those two games in Evansville, they're primed and ready. And I know that as soon as that bracket was announced, they were laser focused. Like, their focus turned to, what do we do to beat Houston?
Right. That's got to be the very first focus. And of course, getting to the game one, playing away, which is second, which is always a harder thing to do. Might there be some fans that will travel along?
I think there will be a good contingent of SIUE fans. It's not a terrible distance. Wichita is maybe 7 hours, not quite, by car. So it certainly could have been a lot worse. But I think people are so excited to be a part of this. We saw it last night during the bracket reveal. We opened up the arena. We invited fans to come. It was free of charge. You know, we had concessions and we were selling OVC championship T-shirts. But I think it was just like we thought, and Brian Baroni, the head coach, and the team thought, we want to do this with our fans. We want to see this. We want them to be able to share in this. And they turned out like we could not have expected. The arena was full. It was a party atmosphere for an hour and a half in there last night. It was unreal.
Well, I'll tell you what, I remember seeing, now granted, this is the soccer contingency, but when we had the bronze boot, right, and you had the women's players, the women's game and the men's games, first the women's game, and you were there because you were calling it, I thought it was just so great, SIUE and the blazing red, really, I would say, sorry, SLU, but really kind of out-cheered just at this event here in St. Louis, which was, you know, not even a final. It's just more of a bragging rights game for the men and for the women. I can only imagine what the fans are going to be like going on the road to support their team in the NCAA first game.
You're right. And that is all, it has all just been growing. That momentum has been growing for the last several years, going back to, you can even look back at the first bronze boot we had at what is now Energizer Park last year, or 2 years ago, I guess, at this point. But that has just been building, and it's a testament to obviously all the great fans, but it's a testament to Andrew Gavin, our athletic director, the staff that he has brought in, and just the push we've made to make sure that SIUE is part of the community, and the community has paid us back tenfold.
Well, and of course, like any good broadcaster, you're prepping in your game prep and in your studying of what your team's going to do and what the other team's going to do. What kind of preview can you give for the fans listening tonight?
The best I can tell you with very little prep at this point, but a little bit, is it looks like it's going to be a really defensive battle. Houston is number two in the country in scoring defense. They're top five in field goal percent defense. SIUE is not bad. They're in the top, I believe they're in the top 30 in scoring defense, top 20 in field goal percent defense. So both of these two teams really hang their hat on defense. And so it's probably going to be a little bit of a slower paced game in that regard, but it's going to be a hard fought game. Neither of the teams turn it over very much. So you're going to see a clean game, a well played game, I think, from both sides. And, you know, for as far as that goes, I think the style fits our Cougars quite well.
Awesome. Joe Pott, thanks for joining us tonight. I'm so glad you enjoyed hearing the clip. We dug that up because I said we have to play that again. I love watching it as well as listening to it. Congratulations for SIUE Cougars, and go Cougars when it comes to the NCAA tournament. Best of luck in the game on Thursday.
Jen, thanks so much. I appreciate you having me on and spending a little time tonight. Thank you.
You got it. That was Joe Pott. You hear him often here on KMOX, and he is the voice of the SIUE Cougars for, I think, all the sports. I've heard him on soccer, and of course, you heard him on the basketball call. Like we talked about, the Ohio Valley Conference champion, SIUE basketball, as the number 16 seed, and they'll face number one seed Houston this Thursday afternoon in the first round of the NCAA tournament in Wichita, Kansas. Tip-off is set for 1 p.m. from the Intrust Bank Arena. The game will air on TBS in this first meeting between the two schools in men's basketball. Well, we've got another segment to go. Time to talk some soccer, women's soccer. The NWSL just had their season opening weekend with some big expected wins and some tighter games than expected. We'll talk about it with Justin Horniker of the St. Louis Magazine next on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Jen C's here with you from the downtown KMOX studios, filling in for Matt Pauley. Myself, as well as Scott Warman, will be filling in for Matt on different days this week. Don't worry, he's coming back. He'll be back. He's got a little bit of time off with his family. Well-deserved, I think, after tons of, I think Tom Ackerman is either still there or just, I think he's still, right, in Jupiter, Florida, still covering preseason. Cardinals preseason is long, so glad to give Matt a week off to spend some time with the family and do all that. So we'll be covering Sports Open Line for you this week. We shift gears now for our final segment to talk soccer, women's soccer. The National Women's Soccer League, NWSL, kicked off its weekend, its 2025 season. All 14 teams had their games take place. There were some expected big wins from the big contenders from last year, and I think some unexpected tighter games than usual. And here to talk about it is my friend Justin Horniker of St. Louis Magazine. Justin, thanks for joining me to talk women's soccer.
Oh, absolutely, Jen. Thank you for having me. Glad to talk to you.
Absolutely. And I know whenever I see you on the city side, the MLS city side, you're always got your fingers busy typing. And I'm sure this weekend kept you busy typing as well, covering all of the games. Just real quick, first overall impression of the opening weekend of the NWSL. How did you find it? How did it hit you?
Yeah, I think, you know, there were some, I think the big clubs hit as expected. So you're Washington Spirits, your Casey Kearns, Orlando Pride, all had pretty big explosive outings. And then, yeah, like you said in the opener, some tighter games and some teams that you're maybe expecting to take a step that haven't really shown that so far.
Was there one that, like, one or two games that stuck out to you the most in terms of either one of those?
Yeah, I think, like, for me, so North Carolina, I kind of wrote about them this offseason as potentially, you know, bridging that gap between, you know, four and five. There's a pretty big gap in the NWSL last year between the top four teams and the rest of the league. And the Courage, adding everyone they added this offseason, I thought had a pretty good opportunity to jump that gap. And then in Louisville, a 1-1 draw, but I think it's more or less that it needs some time under Sean Ayas to really get rolling. That's potentially one to pay attention to.
You know, there was an article that I pulled up and read, and it was from Meg Linehan, who writes for The Athletic. I'm sure you're familiar with her work, but just kind of, she made a general statement on the state of the league and basically saying that before the NWSL can take on the world, right? And there's a lot of crazy things happening with the NWSL in terms of eliminating the draft. We've got players in the women's game heading overseas more than ever before, but that the NWSL must find its place in the U.S. And I thought that was an interesting take. She did it, the article, like 1 or 2 days maybe before the season, but basically talking about how the narrative around women's sports has changed drastically. But she called out the WNBA as being out in front, which is really interesting because for the longest time of my knowing soccer, the U.S. women's national team led the way in all women's sports in terms of breaking barriers. And now we're finding potentially the Women's League of NWSL maybe playing a little catch up with something like the WNBA, get the acronym right, because potentially we don't have that Caitlin Clark like marquee player that's like an amplifier for drawing people to the league. Wondered is your thoughts on something like that?
I do think it's interesting because I think, like, when I look at that, my instant allegory of like Caitlin Clark bringing in eyes that might not necessarily watch the sport, like Trinity Rodman, I think is probably the most marketable like soccer star in the country. To kind of draw the comparison between, you know, if you think of the popularity of basketball to your average American versus the popularity of soccer, if someone tunes into like the women's NCAA tournament, they see that marquee matchup between Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and all the eyes of that true. And there's not necessarily like anything comparable on the women's side, as much as I think like someone like Trinity Rodman, that is such a star at such a young age. But if someone doesn't have a door open into the soccer world, that they still might not know who Trinity Rodman is, I guess. And I think the average person probably does know who Caitlin Clark is. So there certainly is something missing in either like a cultural moment or either in like how we're marketing the sport or what. But I think, you know, I look at the like headway that some of these young stars make and feel like at the audiences that they carry around just as like influencers, not even as soccer stars. I think there is something to be done there for sure.
You know, when I think about it, you brought up Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, of course, because not only are they standout players, but they themselves are rivals on the court, right? And we talk about this all the time when you and I are sitting with St. Louis City SC and, you know, what gets people going more than a rivalry? I mean, there'll be a little rivalry going when City heads out to the Philadelphia Union because City's going to face off with its first head coach, Bradley Carnell. And it makes me wonder as to the efficacy of an NWSL trying to drive. What do they say? You know, rivalries really stoke the fires for fans to want to come watch. And, you know, you can't make one out of nothing, but that maybe be stoking some of those maybe natural rivalries might be somewhere that helps the NWSL pick up steam in terms of picking up more than your, you know, tried and true soccer fan.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Chad. And I think something that NWSL has been like pretty aware of. So they have a rivalry week for the first time this year. And I think, like last year, because rivalry is all about like facing each other in high pressure games and then the environment around it too. And then I think you look at the semifinals from last year's playoffs, Gotham playing DC and the current play in Orlando. Both of those games, KC losing in Orlando, Gotham losing to Washington, were very, very tense and very high expectations, and losing team because of all the just resources and effort and the expectations around a game of that magnitude. I think it starts to stoke a rivalry in a way that, you know, Washington and Gotham, I think, are also should be natural local rivals, but maybe the awareness and just the drive hasn't been there until recently. So now that you have, you know, packed houses, you have all the crazy environment you could want, and then now you have a high pressure game to kind of focus in on. And I think we're starting to see that, you know, with the increased attention around the league, with the increased attendances around the league. I think we're finally starting to get there. But yeah, to your point, there does feel like there needs to be a defining moment in one of these matches to really, you know, stoke outside of the soccer world.
Right, right. Sure. Exactly. And of course, with free agency, big transfers and trades, we've got announcement of a second expansion team for 2026. So a lot of growth, a lot of things happening. First winter in league history without a draft. So that kind of hit me. And I think you and I were talking about it recently. So we've got no college draft anymore. Definitely some moves that the NWSL is making. And I'm not really sure at this point myself where they're trying to head with that, with eliminating the draft and what they're looking forward to in bringing up players.
Yeah, I think like for a long-term view, you want to see, and some teams have definitely started to go this way, some sort of academy system coming out of that. I think you look at, obviously, like Jen, you and I being around a men's team that has like such a well-instituted academy philosophy. Like, I think that's something that teams, if you look at the Casey Currens facility, if you look at Angel City's new facility, they're definitely building with the idea in mind that they're going to have something in-house, whether it's an academy or like an affiliate system. Gotham started up their like academy affiliate system this past offseason. So I think, you know, you do go more that way. And of course, that affects college soccer and has so many more knock-on effects. But as the NWSLPA like kind of needed to act because players were leaving college early to go abroad because those opportunities weren't there in the NWSL unless you were going to go into the draft, and that limited players' ability to negotiate and limited players' ability to, you know, control their own destiny. And that part of it, I think, comes first before you like start to, okay, how does this affect the competitive side of things? How does this affect how we're like marketing the next part? And then you look at, there still have been a lot of like college draftees that would have been draftees that have signed this year, but it just forces teams to maybe work a little bit harder in that scouting aspect and maybe be a little bit more unorthodox. And the league is starting to become a little more of a global league as well in terms of like the talent available. If you look at the stars in the league over the past couple of years, like Tom Mochwinga, Barbara Banda last year, fantastic, spectacular players, of course, coming from places that if you are not like super in tune with what's going on in global women's soccer, you probably wouldn't have heard of him before last year.
Yeah. And one of those, you mentioned the global aspect, the question being, you know, will more U.S. women's national team stars follow Naomi Girma to Europe? You know, her transfer, big time deal. Jenna Neiswanger's move to Arsenal kind of kicked off a little bit of anxiety for NWSL fans, meaning like, are we going to lose? Like, we've got all these great players that people are really starting right to. They want their jerseys. They want to play like them. They want to be like them. And oh, no, we're losing them.
Yeah, like everyone wants tough because that's a player that I think is, you know, your center back, your potential U.S. WNT captain for the next decade. But yeah, I think, you know, I think you're seeing that at the very, very top end, that players, if they can't, if they don't like the situation the NWSL or they can't, you know, get paid what they want to get paid at the very top level, you know, leagues without a salary cap that are willing to invest in that way can. And I think that is one thing. I'm not sure how you address that while keeping the parity that NWSL wants to keep, while keeping the salary structure that they want to keep. But there is that potential where star players, I think the next anxiety point is what happens with Trinity Rodman's next contract and what happens with Trinity Rodman. But yeah, I mean, there is something to do there. I think it maybe some of that anxiety is a little bit overblown because, you know, stars are always popping up, young players in the league. There are a lot of very, very good young players in the league. You know, Alyssa Thompson, the Thompson sisters in Angel City, for instance, are probably the next ones to really get to that point of not just very good on the field, but also off the field marketability and things like that.
Well, I got about 30 seconds. So just a quick reaction. I couldn't let it go by without mentioning that Gotham FC forward, Mac, is it Whittem? Did I say that right? Is it Whittem or Whittem?
Whittem. Whittem, I believe.
Age 14. So she reminds me of Kevin Sullivan, right? For his team becoming the youngest player to step on the field. You know, for me as a mother, watching, you know, a young 14-year-old step on the field with, you know, maybe some of them that aren't quite that old, maybe not quite the age discrepancy you have in the MLS, but didn't know how that hit for you with that. It certainly made history. I'm not sure of its efficacy.
Yeah, it's a tricky one, right? Because you don't want to, I don't know, I think in a way of like, if you're talking development of a player, like, yeah, sure, you want to get them in front of the best players possible, especially if they're already playing up that level. But yeah, I do worry about like a young player like that, that's like still, for all intents and purposes, a child, not even necessarily being emotionally or like even, you know, mentally mature enough in some of those environments, as we've seen with some of the investigations in the league before, that aren't necessarily the best at building up players for long careers. So I do have issues because I don't think that as a league we're necessarily at a point yet where we can say, oh yeah, we are for sure cultivating an environment that these young players can come in and thrive in. I think I haven't necessarily seen quite enough there yet to be super excited, as much as it is for the player for the moment. Yeah. Very cool.
All right. Thanks, Justin. We appreciate your time tonight.
Thank you, Jen.
That was Justin Hordaker of St. Louis Magazine. Busy show, had tons of guests. Appreciate Kyle Sixta and Daniel Hinkamp in the studio. If you missed anything, it's free on the Odyssey app. Look it up. The Gas House Gang is up next on KMOX.